Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Holy Spagoli.
Spagoli?
Yeah, I don't know. What just happened? My house is crazy. It's just one of those nights that sometimes you're a parent and you're just looking outside of what's happening and you're like, what is happening? We went out of town this weekend and, you know, the kids ate stuff they don't usually eat, you know, gluten-free bread and cheese on their sandwich, and then they stayed up late last night. I'm kind of scared of them today.
Yeah, we've had some similar experiences on this trip.
I'm sure.
So there's been a lot of food out of my kids' ordinary, and last night we actually went to a restaurant and they were very accommodating, but it was like, it was hard. And like, literally there, I was like, you know, I can't eat tomatoes. And they were like, well, tomatoes are in everything. Like tomatoes, we touch, you know, like we make salad. It's all of the, you know, bins are together and we don't wash our hands when we grab a handful of tomatoes and we grab a handful of lettuce and we grab a handful. Like, how sensitive are you? I'm like, I don't actually know, but I don't really want to find out. So they ended up like going into their refrigerator and opening like a new bag of salad greens just for me. But it just became one of those like halibut with no seasoning and lettuce for supper. And I still feel awful. Like, I still don't know what touched what, or I still feel awful today. So, and I don't know, but yeah. Yeah.
So
we're
peachy keen.
Yeah. We are in a great, great place for recording a podcast.
So today is supposed to be part three of Paleo Philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to know that you're leaving Canada very shortly.
Tomorrow morning. Have
a bunch to do. So, and you're trying to finish up your book.
Yeah, let's not even talk about that.
So, just so people know.
just so you know, if I sound a little exhausted and stressed, it's because I'm exhausted and stressed. Yeah. 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 Let's not even talk about the book.
So what I propose is that we make an effort to not have an hour and a half show and not to get our cortisol all riled up over things that might frustrate us, like last week.
Although, there was something cathartic about getting riled up last week. I mean, there was some, I mean, I think that there was some, I felt some relief sort of actually talking about it and getting it off my chest. And the feedback from the show has been really awesome. So, but yeah, no, we don't need to go there this week.
Right. Cool. So
on that note,
we had a book signing this weekend, and just want to acknowledge and thank everyone that came out in Virginia Beach. It was nice to meet so many fans. There were a few people that saw that I was Instagramming from Virginia Beach and literally were like, "Where are you going to be?" dropped what they were doing and came out. And their husbands totally ratted them out for saying, like, "We were running errands and she made me stop and derail and come here." So that was really cool. And it was nice to meet everyone. We met also quite a few kids who had been affected and helped by Eat Like a Dinosaur, which is always really special and heartwarming for us. Because as much as we think of our blog as like a food blog, and, you know, we try not to put much credence into it, when we meet families who say that they've been, you know, changed and affected by some of the materials that we've put out, and that it has, you know, made their lives easier or better, it's never gets old. So thank you for everyone who gives us that feedback and that came out. And it was so nice to meet the children that had the gluten allergies, that, you know, they were excited to meet our boys and to kind of talk with us about the book and our recipes and that kind of stuff. So that was cool. And I spent the rest of the weekend hanging out with my mom at the beach. And then there was just a lot of road time, because we left Saturday morning and we came back Sunday night. And then when you go to the beach on a weekend, even though it's a 3-hour drive, it's really a 6-hour drive because everybody's going to the beach on the weekend. So it was a lot of car time for the kids, and we tried to exercise them at a playground and in my mom's pool, and it just doesn't work. And understandably, they're just not in their normal state. So I had a bit of a run-in with them when I came home. They were being rough with the little brother, and they were like playing out front, too rough with him, and it just went downhill from there. So I am I'm a little defeated, I'm gonna be honest. And then I had a really good CrossFit workout though, so maybe I can get excited. I'll cheer myself up. I can tell everyone I posted on Craigslist. Oh my goodness. This is really going to be a terrible show. I posted on Facebook last night. Different.
Facebook and Craigslist. Yeah, I could tell you mixed those two up.
Much different forum. that I had successfully done. My goal was 8 days in a row of training just to see if I could and how I would feel.
Did you really? I haven't been following you on Facebook.
Because you're in Canada, I understand.
Well, and I realized I had like turned off push notifications and tried to like make my phone like as minimal data as possible. But then I realized that not only was I over my data limit, my international data limit, but I was way over, like hundreds of dollars over. So I turned it all off, and now I just live in fear of my next AT&T bill. Yay!
Well, I adore that your mom like joined. Instagram was commenting as you to like.
She was like, "Well, no, I was just
Sarah,
like,
Sarah's proud of your dinner."
Like, oh, can you tell her this for me?
It's pretty adorable. Yeah. So my goal was, I think when we podcasted last week, I told you that I wanted to train for Strong Women.
I didn't know you were going to try and see how you felt with eight cross. Why eight? By the way, CrossFits in a row. Well,
okay, so my thing is, we're going out of town every single weekend, basically from last weekend until like Labor Day or something ridiculous. I don't know why we did this. Two of those weekends are for Bill and Haley. Like, Haley's having a bridal shower, and then Haley's having a wedding, and I want to go. I want to go to both. Yeah,
good reason.
So those are two weekends right there in 1 month, and then we're going out of town with family for a vacation 1 month. We did the book signing this weekend. It is what it is. It's the summertime. And unfortunately for me, it's also the busiest time of year for my work. I know I keep saying that, and everybody's always like, what do you do, Stacey? And like, just don't worry about it. It doesn't matter.
Just accept it. I'm busy. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's stupid. And it's my line of work. And I work in federal contracting, which means I work with the government. And the government spends all of their money in August and September. And so it means busyness for me.
Anyway, the same way April's busy for accountants, right?
Right. Exactly. It's like, if I were an accountant, this would be my tax season. It's just, that's how I roll in the summertime. And of course, it's my kids are off of school. So like, it's our opportunity to go and do stuff without having to like take them out of school or whatever. So it makes everything difficult. That was a really short story that I made long to say. That my goal is to try to work out every single day that we're not in town, so that like the days that I take off for out of town, I can not feel guilty about like not working. So I went through my schedule and I realized that I could do 8 days, and then I would take off Saturday and Sunday, and I would do like a body weight workout one of those days, and then I would have a complete rest day the other day, and then I would come back and I would work 5 days, and then I'll have off Saturday and Sunday, and I'll do a body weight training on one of those days, and then, you know, 5 days. And body weight training might be push-ups, it might be, you know, a mile, it might be 100 burpees, which is what I happen to do on Saturday.
100 burpees?
Yeah, and so,
that's hardcore.
I know, it was actually kind of sickly fun. Matt and I did it together, and we did it on my mom's front lawn.
Did you at least do it in sets, or did you seriously do it all in a row?
No, you do it all in a row to see how fast you can do it. You do it for time. I mean, anybody can do it however they want to do it. What we decided we wanted to do was 100 burpees for time.
I'd be like, I'll see if I can get 100 burpees done in like a week.
Exactly.
I'll just break it up.
Well, I remember when I started CrossFit, like, I couldn't really even get through 10 before I started to fatigue to the point of, like, not being able to do them. Even when I did the Open, what was that, like, 2 months ago, there was a workout that involved burpees, and, like, I tanked that workout. I just did terribly, because burpees were just something I didn't really do well. I didn't have a lot of upper body strength. And
well, it's harder for women, period, just because of the upper body strength.
And I'm a bigger woman, so
which means you have to be a lot stronger to be able to do that whole push-up part.
Right. So, and you know, I try really hard not to do the worm, which is what my gym calls poor form in burpees. You got to do it. Anyway, so a friend of mine who was training for an Oli competition, an Olympic weightlifting competition, went out of town herself and didn't have access to a gym, and she did 100 burpees for time. And she did it in 6 minutes and something. And I was like,
what?
Oh my goodness. Like, how is that even possible? And so ever since I saw her do that.
But all of our like CrossFit listeners are like, I could do that.
No. But, yeah. A lot of people actually ended up doing it after I posted that I did it. And they were not doing 6 minutes. I mean, yes, the top class CrossFits, but not most people are not doing it in 6 minutes. Anyway, so ever since I saw her time, I was like, well, I wonder how long it would take me to do 100 burpees. And so I did 10 burpees and I timed myself, and it took about 30 seconds. And I was like, well, if I kind of paced myself, I know I'll take longer at the end. I'm like, I wonder if I could do it in 10 minutes. And I just like put that number in my head. And so Matt and I on the front lawn of my mom's house put on a timer and went to town, and I finished it, I think it was 9:57, and Matt did it at 9:48. And the only reason I was able to pull out 10 minutes is because Matt was right there. And like every time I'd stand up and like, or lay down and just want to like,
you know, stay there,
I'd look over and he would just keep going. Like he wasn't even saying, come on, come on. Like he was just knocking it out. And I was like, shoot, you know, like, gotta keep going. So it was actually a lot of fun, and it only took 10 minutes. And then we hopped in my mom's pool because we were awful
hot,
drenched.
Yeah.
So I successfully did my 8 days, and then I took a complete rest day yesterday. And I got to bed every night to get my requisite 8 hours of sleep every single night, except one night. And that night happened to be the night that I posted the infamous Sally Fallon post. And it took me a long time to write that and all that jazz. And I just felt really passionate about doing it. And I sacrificed my sleep that night. But so I met all my sleep requirements and I kept my diet squeaky clean, like insane. I'm still, it's my own definition of paleo. I'm still including dairy fat and safe starches, but I'm not eating any grains. I'm not eating any legumes. And the biggest for me is I'm not eating any sort of sugars at all that aren't naturally from fruit, like pure whole fruit, not like date sugar. Like I would eat a date, but I wouldn't eat something with date sugar in it. So, it's fresh fruit season. Like there's no reason to have to do that either. Like I told myself, I'm like, you're just as happy eating peaches and cream, like I talked about last week, than I would be eating a cookie. So why not? So I was like really, really, really super proud of myself that I kept all those commitments. And, I ended up weighing myself and I had lost a couple of pounds, which is really exciting. But I think more exciting than that is every time I've been to the gym, I've seen progress. Like I've made a PR or I've done something I didn't think
That's
I could
awesome.
Do. Today we did this WOD and I told myself like, okay, if you finish this in 21 minutes, you're doing really good. And I finished it in 20 minutes. And so I was just like, yes, every day I'm feeling really good. And I'm feeling like my bone broth and my organ meats and my, you know, good sleep and sticking to clean eating, all those things are definitely contributing to my success. And I'm feeling really good. And so, I have officially signed up for a strong women competition at my gym. It's like a women only strongman competition that my gym, who happens to be a strongman gym, is doing December 14th, which is like way sooner than I thought that I would be, signing up for a competition. But since it's at my gym and it's women only, it's definitely something I can't miss. And they've all told me it's a good entry point to do my very first competition. So
that's cool.
Each week I'll try to update people with not as lengthy of an update,
and
but
as you get healthier and healthier, I'm going to get unhealthier and as I sacrifice everything to get my book done.
But that's where I was when I did Eat Like a Dinosaur. That's where I was a few months ago when I did Beyond Bacon. And sadly, a lot of us that read books, it's not just about like health. It's about, you know, what we talk about every week. It's a stress factor in your life. Yeah. And it causes a snowball effect of not sleeping, not eating the right things, being stressed,
I'm definitely experiencing the stress-related food cravings where it's just like, I just want nuts. I just want nuts. That's what I want. I guess my body's just recognizing that as being like a really energy-dense food, but I don't do well with nuts. I can take a handful in my salad once a week or maybe twice a week if I'm eating really clean otherwise, but I can't eat them every day and I can't eat a tub of them. And that's like all I want. So it's like driving me crazy. It's driving me crazy. It's okay. It's okay. Let's change the subject now. Stacey, are you still there?
Oh, I was totally muted. I did the thing where I was like, hey, you said salad. Let's talk about whether paleo is an all-meat diet or not.
That's an awesome segue. I'm glad you were muted for that.
I know, I'm getting good at these, but you missed it because I was muted. But now I said it, so.
Now you said it. Let's actually talk about some philosophy so that I don't have to think about editing and illustrating.
I can't believe you're your own illustrator. I'm sorry. I love you. I just want to give you a big hug all the way from the East Coast to Canada. Because I'm just like, when you told me you were doing that, Sarah. Long
I know.
Hug.
Do you know what, though? I know I said I didn't want to talk about this. But so for anybody who hasn't subscribed to my newsletter, I haven't talked about this anywhere else. I've only talked about it on the newsletter. But we had some issues. And the solution to the issues was that I am actually illustrating a large portion of the book. I'm not doing I'm not doing everything, but I'm doing all of the really technical medical illustrations. And the good part about that is they're being done right. And I'm actually a really good medical illustrator. So, so they're beautiful. The one that I finished is beautiful. And it's going to be like exactly the right information laid out in exactly the way I want it laid out so that people can understand it. And it's just really important for me to have the visual representation of the concepts that I'm explaining. So it's going to be awesome. The problem is that I am now illustrating a book during the last crazy 5 weeks of also editing, which is incredibly time consuming, and doing everything else to get this book print ready. So it's right now sort of hitting a bit of a crisis point, and you know, I'm just sort of burying my head in the sand and trying to push through it. But it's just so much in such a short period of time. And so, so it's going to be awesome. But it's just so much work. And I really like illustration. If I just wish we had figured out that I was going to be doing it like 6 months ago, because then I could have been doing it slowly over 6 months instead of, you know, 25 medical illustrations in a month. So, right. That was me not complaining about the book. I was not going to.
Well, I think it's a valid update for people to understand.
It's a valid update. I have a lot of, it's just been really stressful. And I'm really, it's funny because I'm kind of enjoying editing, actually, other than the part where it's incredibly time consuming, as a process of, you know, watching the language get tightened up and, you know, going through different people reading the book and answering their questions. And it's just making sure that all of my explanations are super crystal clear. And I'm just really enjoying that. I'm actually really liking watching my book get better and better, other than the part where it's crazy time consuming. And I'm really enjoying illustrating because I've always done art as a hobby. I used to do life drawing. Like I've illustrated my own thesis. Like this is kind of one of those hobbies I've always had, but it's the deadline doing, you know, so much at once. And I have other responsibilities. I can't just, you know, lock myself in a room and only work on this day in and day out. So it's, the last week and a half since all this went down has been really, really stressful for me. And it's all happened while I've been traveling, which has been really hard because I've basically been watching my family go out and have fun and go out and do stuff and go visit with each other. And I've been not. I've been, you know, sitting at my mom's kitchen table or standing at this like standing desk that we jerry-rigged for me. While, you know, my family's been going off and doing all the things that I've been wanting to do for 2 years since we were last here. So I have a lot of emotions, kind of resentment. There's some resentment in there and a lot of stress and a lot of frustration. And I'm trying to just focus because for me, the best thing that I can do to manage stress is to kind of deal with the stressors and sort of tick those things off my list. That for me is the best thing I can do for managing stress is just watch my to-do list things get crossed off. But you know, we're going to spend 15 hours traveling tomorrow. And it's just a lot for me all at once. And I think probably everyone can relate to that when you just have so many things just piled on your plate all at once. And I'm trying very, very hard to, you know, keep a positive attitude and make sure I at least have some time to meditate or, you know, something to reduce stress, make sure I've spent a little bit of time outside. But it's just figuring out how to look after myself and do everything that I'm supposed to do is not a problem I have solved yet.
Yeah.
So there's
long distance hug.
Thank you.
We don't mean to be Debbie Downers. Sometimes
you
It's just, I don't know what
podcast is now.
Yeah, we're not perfect people. So sometimes you get us when we're owned by crabby.
I hate whining about the book because it's such a tremendous opportunity to be given and such a tremendous privilege to be able to write a book that is going to help people. Like, that's such an amazing thing. So I hate complaining about it because I just feel like, I shouldn't complain about something that's such a great opportunity and such a great thing to be working on. But there you go. I just complained about it. So too late. Can't take it back.
I think everyone can relate to enjoying doing something that they're passionate about, but it also being difficult or overwhelming or stressful. I mean, being a parent is exactly those things, right? Like, we're all fulfilled with the love and devotion that we have for our children, and we wouldn't, well, you and I don't know about everybody else, but I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, I just adore my boys, but that doesn't mean that sometimes it's not stressful and difficult and overwhelming and frustrating and just a day at a time. Tomorrow they'll wake up from, you know, whatever craziness they had today, and I'm sure they'll climb in bed with me and give me hugs and kisses, and it'll be awesome. It's just how it goes. So
what was that segue you had?
Yeah, well, you ruined it.
Sorry. Well, actually, you and the mute button.
Yes. How about hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian?
That's a great, I love that hashtag. I've taken so many pictures and I haven't been Instagramming because of the whole hundreds of dollars data thing.
I wouldn't Instagram if it cost me $10 every time I Instagrammed. No, probably not.
But one of the great things about being here is that there's just been vegetables galore. So vegetables.
I like them.
You like them. I like them. I know lots of people who like them.
So I had someone come up to me at the book signing asking about the paleo diet. And he was just like somebody in the store. It was actually at Whole Foods. So it was an interesting crowd. It was different than kind of the usual bookstore crowd. And he was like, well, what about the, you know, acid building up in your body from the excess protein from all the meat that you're eating? And I was like, well, first of all, it doesn't exactly work like that, especially if you're eating grass-fed healthy animals and, you know, balancing your diet. But second of all, we actually don't consider this a meat-only diet. And I, you know, began to explain to him that vegetables are just as vitally important to health and wellness as is meat and fat, and eating quality, good kinds of vegetables. I mean, please don't run out and get lentils. And kind of explained to him that, you know, there's vitamins and minerals of varying kinds in the different colors of foods and the different seasonalities and localities of food, and that it's really important to eat vegetables too. And he got all excited and ended up buying the book. And it was like, really? Is it that strong of a myth? Because I don't realize that it's that much of a myth. I guess because you and I eat
I get
so many
it a
vegetables.
Lot though, and I get it in a couple of different ways. So yeah, because you and I, like, I eat tons of vegetables.
Admittedly, I mean, you eat more than me. Sometimes I look at your plate and I'm like, what?
And the thing is too, this is the, like, really thing that I sometimes admit and sometimes don't. I'll like post an Instagram photo of my plate, and like there's vegetables and there's meat. And quite often, by the time I'm done my meal, I've actually had like second and third helpings of the vegetables. Like, my brother was watching me eat, this was like a week ago, and my mom had made this like amazing, like simple coleslaw with like red cabbage, cut up apple, avocado oil, and white wine vinegar. And it was just delicious. And there was like three other vegetables, and I can't even remember what the meat was. It might've been chicken. I don't remember. Roast beef, something pastured. And my brother was eating with us, and I looked at how much food he put on his plate. And then I was like literally taking like half the bowl of the coleslaw, like a whole head of cabbage. Like probably ate half a head of cabbage by myself that night. And I had thirds of that coleslaw because it was so good. It was just totally hitting the spot. And I was looking at my brother. I was like, is that all you eat? Like, this is, he's a big 6 foot tall guy. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I eat more than you. It was just, that was like all I had to say. And he just was like watching me pack away all this vegetables. I was like, this is why I'm healthy, is all of these vegetables.
But I love that you said, this is why I'm healthy. That's so awesome.
Well, that and the fact that I eat organ meat pretty much every day. I've had organ meat for 2 out of 3 meals today, like so far. And I eat a lot of organ meat. I eat a lot of seafood. I eat a lot of vegetables. I eat a lot. I really, and the more I eat, typically the better I feel, and typically the better regulated my weight is. Because when I eat that many vegetables, that's when I don't have the crazy, like, sugar and fat cravings. You know, I just, my hormones are so much better regulated when I have those big, really, you know, nutrient rich meals. But people still see a paleo diet. And I don't know if how I eat is necessarily that unusual within the paleo community, and maybe a little bit more of an extreme. But there's this really strong perception that a paleo diet is an all meat diet. And I'm not even quite sure what the source of that is. Do you know, like, which book it would be that would give you that impression?
I think just because people think it's a low carb diet, and then there are maybe Gaudis. Like, I'm not quite sure.
It may come from, like, you know, Lauren Cardain comes down pretty hard on starches, and then Whole9 comes down pretty hard on fruit. And then if you did both and you avoided starches and fruit, there wouldn't, you know, you've only got non-starchy vegetables left. And granted, a lot of people don't think of eating half a head of cabbage. I'm kind of wondering if that's kind of it. Like, if you're sort of following sort of more than one of the, like, more extreme on the carbohydrate side versions of a paleo diet. Does that make sense?
I hear you. I don't think it's that complicated, though. Like, I think some of us who've been doing it for a while can get kind of confused. Like, I know when I went AIP and, you know, I think I must have texted you a million times, like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to eat? Because
yeah, no, it's true.
I was doing low carb, so I wasn't eating starches, and then I wasn't doing nightshades, and then on top of that, I was trying to do a 21-day sugar detox to kick it off, because I had all kinds of problems, and I thought maybe candida and stuff like that, and so I was trying to just kind of, you know, get rid of all that all at once, I was doing the practical paleo version of an AIP, which also eliminated some fibrous greens. And it just, I literally was like, zucchini and carrots. Like, because then if you're also talking about thyroid issues, like, I didn't want to eat too much. I forgot the word right now, but cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower.
The goitrogenic.
Goitrogenic foods.
Which, by the way, we just need to put a link into my post on why avoiding cruciferous vegetables if you have a thyroid disease is actually not backed up by science. So Monica will put that in the show notes. But just for anybody who's listening and is following the autoimmune protocol in order to deal with any kind of autoimmune thyroid disease, whether that's Graves or Hashimoto's, the whole idea of avoiding vegetables from the cruciferous family, you know, cabbage and broccoli, because of their goitrogenic properties. I wrote a whole, it was an excerpt from the book, explaining exactly where that idea comes from, but also that the science is not supported, and that there's actually science to actually show that there's benefits to thyroid function from including those vegetables in your diet. So just as an aside, because I don't want people to get, I want people to understand that information. I want to spread that broccoli is good for you, as long as your selenium and iodide levels are being addressed through diet as well. So
And I would say for me personally, once I, you know, did the first 30 days or whatever, what I realized was that I just needed my food to be cooked. Like it, you know, digestively, cabbage and broccoli go through my system a lot easier with, you know, no problems that I can detect to energy levels or anything that might be an indicator of thyroid health as long as I'm cooking them properly. So, and it's the same thing with kale and some of the more fibrous greens as well. Anyway, so I think maybe the answer to your question was, you know, people get wrapped around the axle trying to figure out all the different versions. And I think for those of us who are kind of really in depth and working on it, maybe we do get confused because you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, thyroid and autoimmune and sugar detox or Whole30 or whatever it is you're doing, like limit, you know, X, Y, and Z, like what can I eat? But I think for the most part, the people that I encounter with this perception, they come from like that grunty caveman perception, like, oh, it's a caveman diet. All you eat is meat. It's like, really? Are we elementary school kids? Like, do we have no thought process? Like, just because it's called paleo, we're not, you know, doing any sort of research or even logical deduction. You're just going to assume that it's a meat diet because you think that's what caveman ate? Like, I really honestly think that it's at that basic of a level for some people.
Well, I get comments on blog posts or Facebook statuses where, and I get the same kind of comments that you were talking about, the question about, well, like, what about, how isn't it hard on your kidneys to eat that much meat? And then I get the other side of people who are coming from either following a plant-based diet themselves or their sort of personal search into nutrition education started with some of the, you know, really outstanding resources, but that are plant-based diet focused resources that are out there. Like, you know, maybe they first watched Forks Over Knives or something like that as their intro into understanding the intersection of nutrition and health. So I get that, those kinds of questions as well, that, you know, but I heard that, you know, meat causes cancer. That's where, you kind of get the kidney load and the cancer all in, those are the kind of questions that I get, and with all the assumption that we only eat meat, or that all we eat is like meat and avocado or something like that.
Oh, you're in Canada. Say it again.
Avocado.
You said it kind of normal that time. You said it the Canadian way the first time, though.
Oh, now I can't even do it.
You're all twisted.
I'm all confused. I don't know what language I speak. I mean, language. I speak English.
No, it's a different language, for sure.
And French, actually. I speak English and French, but avocado.
Of course you speak French. Oh, my gosh.
I'm Canadian. Of course I speak French. What are you talking about?
Your brain explodes me. All right.
Wait, you didn't know I spoke French?
No. Why would that you spoke French?
My father's French Canadian.
I think that you should do a translation of every podcast in French for people.
No way, Jose.
I'm delirious. Where are these jokes coming from? They don't even make sense. All right. Have we dispelled this rumor enough? We like meat, but we also like vegetables and you should eat them. I don't know that you're ready to be as hardcore as Sarah. Just like me, I am in awe of her hardcoreness with her raw veggie eating and her sardines.
I do, but, you know, maybe what we can do is talk, just give a, and sardines, give a minute to talk about.
You got some geeky science?
Well, I wasn't going to go too geeky, but I was going to kind of say some of the important reasons for eating vegetables. You know, kidneys actually is not. They have shown studies that show that very, very low carb, high protein diets actually don't cause the whole, you know, acid alkaline imbalance thing on the kidneys as sort of was presented in the early paleo days. But certainly let's just have a brief minute to talk about the link between meat consumption and cancer, because that is a real link, and it's, you know, important, I think, for us to be really clear on, you know, what's going on there. So there are some really great epidemiological studies, which are the type of study where you kind of like look at a bunch of people, get them to fill out surveys and see what they eat, and then look what kind of are, and maybe surveys that say other things about their lives, whether or not they smoke, how much they exercise, and then look at what diseases they have or how healthy they are, what weight they are. And then you kind of go, well, are there any trends? And this is the way science starts. Science starts first by making observations, and epidemiological studies are excellent observations. They help point out trends. And that is where every science is, that has ever been done has started. You start by looking for trends, and then you devise an experiment to test whether or not that trend is an actual link, that if there's actually A causes B, or whether or not it's something else. So first you look to see if two things increase together, or if one thing decreases, the other thing increases, if there's maybe some relationship. And then you devise an experiment to test if that relationship really, really exists. And then once you know that relationship exists, then you try and figure out why. And what's interesting about nutritional sciences is it's actually a young enough science that a lot of what we know about nutrition is still in that epidemiological phase. So it's still in that phase where we're just making observations to sort of form our hypotheses to then go and test whether or not there's an actual link. So there's some epidemiological studies that have shown that higher meat consumption, especially processed meat consumption, correlates with increased risk of cancer. Now, the very, very, very important piece of information here is that that link is only there in people who don't eat green vegetables. So it's high meat diets in the absence of green vegetables that seem to be linked to increased risk of cancer. And there's a really interesting study that was done trying to sort out why that might be happening. And what they actually found was that chlorophyll, which is the, you know, thing in green plants that takes, you know, energy from the sun and makes energy for the, you know, makes sugar for the plant to live, that chlorophyll actually in the digestive tract stops the metabolism of heme, which is the iron molecule that's in like red blood cells that binds with oxygen and helps transport oxygen throughout your body. That molecule is sort of enriched in red meat. That's actually what makes red meat red. So what chlorophyll does is it actually stops your body from metabolizing heme into a carcinogenic byproduct. They don't know exactly what that carcinogenic byproduct is, but they do know that that's where the link is. So an all-meat diet, if you really aren't eating vegetables, does increase your risk of cancer. But if you're eating vegetables, there's absolutely no increased risk whatsoever. So you can eat tons of red meat, and as long as you're eating some spinach or some kale chips or something beside that red meat, that's not increasing your cancer risk, and it's an incredibly healthy way to eat. So, there's some really good reasons why paleo is not an all meat diet, because all meat diets would not be very healthy. There's also lots of, you know, vitamins and minerals that it's much easier for us to get out of vegetables than it is out of meat. I mean, meat's a super nutrient dense food. There's vitamins and minerals in meat that is really hard to get out of vegetables, like B12, which doesn't even exist in vegetables. But you really need both. And so that's kind of like a really important point. And how much of each, like, we don't really know that. We don't really know if your plate should be like half meat and half vegetables, a quarter meat and three quarters vegetables, three quarters meat and a quarter vegetables. We don't even know if that matters. But you do need both. And so this is where we kind of come back to, listen to your body. If you feel better eating more vegetables, eat more vegetables. If you feel better eating more meat, eat more meat. It might change back and forth. Your body will probably crave the foods that are richer in the nutrients that you actually need. It's something that you can kind of listen. If you're just really craving that 14-ounce steak that day, you make sure you have some vegetables on the side, and maybe tomorrow you'll just really want a salad. So that's kind of, I think, sort of an important place to take this discussion of like why paleo is not an all meat diet. It's important. It's important to eat stuff that grew from the ground.
Boom sauce. I'm down.
Boom sauce?
Yeah, I don't know. These are things that George left behind.
My mom was saying she listened to our podcast from George, like right after I had come home from the Down Bacon release party, and he was like in the room with you. You guys were sharing the treadmill. And she's like, you guys should just have George on as like your regular. Like he should just be like, every month, this is our episode with George.
Totally. But maybe I could get him to fly out and watch The Boys every month for that episode. Okay, so I heard you talk a lot about nutrient density in kind of some of the things that you were talking about. And that's a term that we use often on this show. And I think maybe we could round out the show covering what we mean by nutrient density. You feel good tackling that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's probably that's a good question to answer. And I think that's probably a good like cap off
cool.
on this show.
So for me personally, I feel really frustrated that I didn't figure out nutrient density in the beginning, but I feel really grateful that I've now figured it out. We've talked a lot about my health journey and Sarah, your health journey as well. But mine in particular kind of, I had great weight loss in the beginning, but I had all these health struggles related to, turns out, micronutrient deficiencies. And I would reference people to check out Dr. Jason and Mira Calton, who... run Calton Nutrition. They've got a book called Naked Calories that if you're interested in this topic is really awesome and kind of tackles this topic in depth. And it's kind of their specialty, right? They think that the Americans in particular are very food rich but nutrient poor is I think what their definition is. And I would say that that's a lot of, you know, what I did when I went from eating a sad diet to eating a paleo diet is, of course, I experienced wonderful health improvements in the beginning, not just weight loss, but, you know, all kinds of great things because I went into a low inflammation diet. However, because I really wasn't focused on nutrient density and making sure that my body was absorbing nutrients properly, I had some other health problems that, you know, weren't being resolved, like hair falling out and my nails being weak and my skin breaking out. And I still had some inflammation in my joints. I have arthritis in my family. And when you're over 300 pounds for 30 years, obviously there was about 20 years I was over 30 pounds, 300 pounds. But anyway, those sort of things accumulate in your system, and it takes a bit more effort to figure out what the problem is. And once I learned about nutrient density and properly absorbing those nutrients, it was night and day in terms of my health. And so when I think about nutrient density, I think about health. Like when you're eating for the purpose of being healthy, when you're worried about nourishing your body, then you're thinking about what are the foods that fuel you the best? What are the foods that give you the most bang for your buck? And that's where Sarah and I talk about organ meat and sardines. And last week we were talking about butter and heavy cream and saying, well, there's value to adding that dairy to your diet if it's grass-fed because it is much much higher in nutrients, and it's a very nutrient-dense food. And there's a lot of nutrient-dense foods, pastured egg yolks, fish, seafood. We talk about a lot of these foods on the show, and the reason that we talk about them is because if you're eating skinless, boneless chicken breast, olive oil, and steamed broccoli as kind of the, you know, quote unquote, paleo template, then you're missing out on a lot of really valuable nutrients in your diet, and you're not going to perform your best. You're not going to feel your best. You're not going to be your healthiest. And so that's where I get really excited, Sarah, that we kind of found each other. And I feel like I learned a lot you know, you being my guru on this journey, because, you know, I learned a lot of it from Diana from Radiance Nutrition, kind of learning that I wasn't absorbing properly with my gallbladder. I took supplements that made a huge difference. But then even more than that, you know, once I kind of went autoimmune, I really took bone broth and organ meats really seriously. And ever since, my health and my energy levels are just, I mean, I want to say it's night and day, but it's not quite night and day, because it was night and day already when I went sad to paleo.
Right.
But then it was another like night to day when I went, you know, regular paleo to nutrient dense paleo. And so I cannot express to people enough how passionately we feel about this. Now, that's not to say that you're not paleo if you're eating chicken breasts, olive oil, and steamed broccoli. You know, we've talked before, this paleo philosophy show, eat what you want, eat what makes you feel good. But if you're able to find some nutrient dense foods within the paleo template that work for you, like for me, I know that, you know, I really like kombucha and I really like chicken liver mousse, which we finally posted the recipe for. I really like certain kinds of seafood, and I love having soup for breakfast every day. So I'm able to say, you know what, that's a really good kind of hunk of foods that have good nutrients to nourish me. If I focus on these foods that I really enjoy, I won't feel like it's a burden to add them to my diet every week. That's easier than telling yourself, like, you know, oh, I'll just pinch my nose and eat this sardine because I have to. I mean, you could do that, but this is about enjoying life and enjoying food as much as it's about nourishing your body. So, that's what I have to say about nutrient density. But I'm pumped. I don't have anything to wrap that up.
Well, okay. So, wrap it up with how your taste buds change. That's how you need to wrap it up.
So you're saying, like, because in the beginning I wouldn't have liked organ meat at all.
Well, no,
or I mean, wouldn't have liked having broth for breakfast at all.
Yes, because you really strongly disliked organ meat in the beginning.
Yeah. And you still don't like organ
meat. I have to say, I ate organ meat because I knew it was good for me initially.
Oh, for sure.
And now I really enjoy it and would choose it over muscle meat, because in the sort of year and a half that eating organ meat has become a priority for me, my taste buds have changed to the point where I enjoy it more than muscle meat, probably 80% of the time.
And I would say, when we don't tell the children, well, honestly, I don't think we've ever told them, like, this is organ meat. They love bone marrow.
Who doesn't? Are you kidding me? We fight over it.
Well, we went to the Organic Butcher of McLean, which is like one of the things that I feature in Beyond Bacon. It's this like really cool local butcher shop that only serves pastured and organic meat. And we went there for a book signing, and Cole was there with me. And when we were like getting ready to leave, Cole looks up at me with doe eyes and he's like, can we ask them for some marrow bones? It was the cutest thing I've ever seen. And there was a woman standing next to me, and she looked at me and she was like, I wish I had tape recorded that, because nobody I know would believe that a kid would ask for marrow bones. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, so he talked to the butcher, and, so I think, and we don't tell the kids about, when we grind liver into their ground meat either. And they never say like, this tastes funny or this tastes different. I think personally, it is my belief that those of us who have been raised kind of exclusively on muscle meat, you develop a palate for that muscle meat. And therefore, when you eat something outside of that palate, your taste buds say, whoa, what's this? I'm not used to it. But for children, if you're able to start them off early, it's my belief that children are drawn to foods that they need and crave and nourish them. This is, I believe, scientifically proven that, you crave and you're drawn to the foods that you really need when you're not talking about falsified food, right? When you're talking about whole food sources that are in front of you, you are naturally drawn to the food that your body is in most need of. And so I think it's the same for children, right? Like children are growing and need nourishment even more than us. They're developing their eyes, they're developing their brains, they're developing all kinds of important things that need nourishment intensely early on in their lives. And my children, before we were even paleo, we gave them liver because we knew it was a nutrient-dense food, and, like, we didn't eat it. We made it for them because it was like, oh, they need this thing because it's good for them. And, like, we never ate it, but they loved it. And now, to this day, my kids will, you know, put something with bones on the table, and they'll fight over who gets the marrow in it. Like, even a pork chop, because we eat bone-in pork chops, like, a little bit of marrow will accumulate in the top of the T-bone. And they will literally elbow each other to take the marrow out of Matt and I's bones and eat it. And I just, I think if you're able to, you know, work on adapting that into your own palate, but also if you have children, you know, the more that you can introduce it, especially by grinding it into other ground meats and seeing whether or not there's a reaction. I would never lie to my children if they said to me, this is different, what is it? I would say, I added liver, it's really nutrient dense and helpful for us, what do you think? And most likely kids will either tell you, like, oh, that's cool, why is it healthy? Will it make me strong? Tell me about it. Or they might just, you know, freak out if they haven't been introduced to new foods. And in that case, I'm sure you figured out a parenting technique how to deal with that. But I won't presume. But I would say that that's one of the most important things that you can do as a parent is to offer those flavors and textures at an early age so that their palate doesn't get accustomed to only muscle meat, so that when they are older, it's not a thing like it is for us to say, oh, I'm going to eat this because I know it's good for me. Yes, there are recipes specifically on Sarah's site and in my book and on our site that we have developed to make them more palatable for you because we recognize that you're not used to them. And therefore, here, try this tongue recipe. Here, try this, you know, liver recipe, because this is the best way that we think it will be palatable for you to eat this heart or whatever. But also, the more you do that within your family and your children, the more you will adapt and the more you will enjoy it. Now, again, Sarah, you're way more hardcore than me. I wouldn't say that I've come to enjoy organ meats. Like, I don't look forward to eating them the way that I look forward to eating a pastured pork chop. I do, however, really love when Matt makes tongue and heart, because I know that I like those foods almost as much as I like muscle meat, and I know how good they are for me. So when he makes me a soup and he says, I put beef heart in there, I get super excited because I'm like, double bonus, like, organ meat in my broth. But that's not to say that I'm like jumping up and down because it's the best thing I've ever eaten. It's not bad. I enjoy eating it, but I get super excited that I know that it's going to make my skin feel great.
I had both tongue and heart today.
I'm sure you did.
Heart for breakfast, tongue for lunch.
Sometimes I just want to give you the Better Human Being Award. Like, here you go. You win. Sardines, organ meats,
I do admit to not making good food choices all day, though. So, my kids still, I would say it's not, they do really well when I grind up liver or heart and add it to ground meat. If it's sort of cooked more overtly than that, it's still not their favorite, depending on what it is. And we just eat it anyway. I think maybe it's because of how great I feel. And I don't know if you can hear that sound, but my mom's fish tank just started making a weird rattly noise.
I thought maybe you were playing bingo.
That would have been awesome. No, it came from the fish tank and the fish got all excited. Maybe it's like an automatic fish feeder. Do you think she has one of those? Oh, the fish
I
are
don't
like,
know what your mom has.
I don't know either. That's the thing. The fish are going crazy. I'm assuming they just got fed and that was the noise that everybody heard. And just be happy for my mom's fish. And we'll just move on. I was going to say something about sort of when we talk about nutrient density, typically what we mean is micronutrient density. Micronutrient density, I think, you know, the other thing that kind of goes in there is typically like good fats, and fats are technically a macronutrient. But that for me, when I'm evaluating whether a food is a nutrient dense food or not, What I'm looking at is the amount of micronutrients. So that would be things like vitamins and minerals, but also things like antioxidants and polyphenols and all those like great things that, that plants have. And things like coenzyme Q10, which is, I think, not technically a vitamin or a mineral, but is a great thing that, you know, heart meat has, and is really great for cardiovascular health. Those are kind of the things I look at. How much of that am I going to get for a serving, you know, for how much that is going to fill me up, for how much energy that that is going to give me, because I'm still, a person who is, you know, struggling to or working hard to maintain my weight loss and, you know, making sure that I'm getting lots of nutrients and not too much energy is important for my personal formula, for my, you know, my own health and my own goals. So that's kind of what I look at. And there's no formula. There's no like, oh, it's got 67% of this and 36% of this, and therefore it's got to be a nutrient-dense food. There's no like, you know, there are sort of websites out there that will give you a score of whether or not a food has, you know, X percentage of your daily recommended allowance of whatever nutrient, and it will, you know, tell you if that's a good food for you or not.
What Matt Lalonde did his AHS thesis on last year, and I heard that he's actually since revamped it and actually done like a...
And he's actually, he's in the process of trying to get it published. So when it is published, it will be available for everyone. It'll be a big deal. But yeah, he's actually, what he's done that's really interesting is he has changed the definitions of what nutrients are. He's looked at what nutrients are really essential. And then there's a lot of sort of various scoring systems out there that say, well, this is an essential nutrient and this is a non-essential nutrient. What Matt has done is he's looked at the non-essential nutrients and looked at the conversion rates and how well your body can actually create those non-essential nutrients and taken that into account, because there's a lot of nutrients that are labeled as non-essential, but that your body really isn't very efficient at making. Just because we can doesn't mean we do it very well. I mean, a great example is omega-3 fats. So there's basically sort of three omega-3 fats. They're just sort of, they're just different length chains. Wasn't that last week that I explained how these are all chains? The one that's labeled as essential is alpha-linoleic acid. And the reason why it's labeled as essential is because it's the shortest omega-3 fat. And it's just, we need an omega-3 fat. Our body needs omega-3 fat because we don't actually have enzymes that can insert that double bond into the omega-3 position between the third and fourth carbon in the chain. And if anybody's confused, listen to last week's episode. So we need an omega-3 fat, and because ALA is the shortest, we're like, oh, that's the essential one. But what our body actually uses is DHA and EPA, which are slightly longer omega-3 fats. And the conversion from ALA to DHA or EPA is extremely inefficient. We can convert something like 0.5% of the ALA in our body to DHA and EPA. So when people are, you know, eating plant sources of omega-3 fats, like flax seeds to get your, or chia to get your omega-3s, you're getting ALA and your body really can't use it. The conversion to DHA and EPA are really inefficient. And where you get DHA and EPA are animal sources and algae. So algae actually has DHA. It's pretty much the only plant source, at least that I'm aware of, that has a longer chain omega-3. Everything else you're getting from fish and pastured meat. And so, you know, so what Matt Lalonde is doing is he's kind of taking into account things like that, like not saying that any omega-3 is good, but that you really need DHA and EPA. And so he's kind of adjusting for what is more contemporarily understood nutritional science information. I think it's going to be really cool when his little calculator is done.
His little calculator.
Well, not to then like make it super complicated with the science and then oversimplify it, but I mean, he's giving us a score to food, and people are going to be able to look at those scores and use that information to determine whether or not that food is the best choice that they can make. That's cool.
Yeah. When you said, when you said his little calculator, I had this image of him with like masking tape glasses on and like a little pocket protector holding a little calculator, talking to everybody about nutrient density. And what is hysterical is like, if you've ever seen a picture of Matt Lalonde, and I'm sure Monica can link to one in the show notes, like he is the opposite of like a scientific
nerd.
Not nerdy
at all. He's like,
he's what every scientist wishes they look like. Like he's just right.
Yeah. No, like totally. He's what like every nerd is like. Yeah. Why don't I look like Matt Lalonde?
Yeah, like yeah. Matt Lalonde represent nerds. Like, anyway.
You would not know that he's got a PhD from Harvard if you just bumped into him on the street, is what we're trying to say. So, until he probably started talking, and then you'd be like, wait a minute.
Don't judge a book by its cover, and if someone talks about their little calculator, don't underestimate the power of their brain.
We heart Matt Lalonde.
Yes.
Matt, you should come on our show. He probably doesn't listen. But sure. Matt, if you listen, you should come on our show.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got nothing better to do.
We can Canadian it up together.
Yeah. So, are we done with this? Can I talk about how we've also been told by several of our fans that we should invite Sally Fallon onto the show? And I'm just going to close out this conversation and not bring it up anymore by saying, if you read my post on my take of.
I don't think it would be a constructive conversation.
No, it wouldn't be constructive. Not only that, but I'm also not interested in furthering her agenda. I have quotes that I've provided in the post, and I have, beyond those quotes, I've seen many detailed emails that make it very clear to me that the agenda that Sally has is different from the agenda that I have, and I'm not interested in furthering that agenda. So even if it were to be constructive, I'm just not interested in extending that platform. So, which is unfortunate because I think that there's a lot of really great things that the Weston A. Price Foundation in general has done. And I don't want to discount that. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I've been exposed to a certain number of things. And at this point, it's just not something I'm interested
in. Well, and we're not a show that thrives on conflict. We're not, I mean, for me, having a guest on in order to have a heated debate is not the point of this
Jimmy
show.
Does that so good. Like, Jimmy can have people on and he does it in such a respectful, like, low-key way. He's way more low-stress than us. You know what I mean? Like, he just takes it things in stride. He had that.
Well, Jonathan Baylor is another one who does it really well.
Okay.
He can just be like, yeah, he just has this wonderful way of having, you know, people with very, very differing opinions from him on a show and can just navigate that really well. I'm not sure that's in my skill set.
Yeah. I think it would cause me more stress than it would be worth. I'd be like, anyway.
Well, maybe sometime in the future we will develop those skills. You know, they've both been podcasting way longer than we have. But, no, it's kind of not.
It's not going to happen. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I'm putting it out there because several people have asked. It's not going to happen.
I really think there's no chance that an invite would be accepted anyway. But
I don't know that that's the truth. But,
really?
Yeah. I don't know that that's the case at all. But my point is I'm not extending the invitation to find out. no, Sally has been, as much as I've shared, she's honestly been very nice and welcoming of me and the community that, you know, we're a bunch of local people. She has a local farm here. It's like less than an hour from my house. So, there's a, you know, anyway, I don't want to get into details, but my point is Sally's been very nice. She responds to emails. She's been so, you know, she was actually supportive of Beyond Bacon, even though she didn't want to be tied to paleo at all. She did give me a quote for the book and let me use her photo because she understood the mission that I personally was doing, and she was nice to me. That doesn't change, however, the overall agenda and what happened in that newsletter and the resulting email exchange about her intentions with that was just not something I was cool with. So, like all of us have the opportunity to do, I choose not to buy food that I don't believe in. In this case, I'm choosing not to, you know, traffic a site with an agenda that I don't believe in. It's my personal choice, and I don't usually share my personal choices with readers, only to say that, you know, I did share some of that exchanges that Sally said were okay to share, so that people could make their own decision on that as well. So, with that, I'm going to close out episode 50.
Are you kidding me?
No.
50?
50.
Oh my goodness. We should have started with that. This is episode 50? Wow.
Who I'm wants sorry. To listen it to us 50 that. Times?
No, like that. Yeah. Wow. That's 50.
So we're going to have one more show. I don't even know what it is. I think it's a Q&A. I think it's a non-philosophy show. Something
well,
interesting.
We've got to break them up at some point. And these have been really great shows for me to work on while I've been traveling. But we've got to break it up a little bit, I think.
So I think next week we might do like a real question and answer show. We've got those building up. Yeah, I think we'll answer all 600 that are waiting, Sarah. What do you think? And then... the week after that is going to be a best of show, because that'll be the episode 52, which marks a year of podcasting for us, which is pretty exciting. So
we've been doing this for almost a year. That's crazy town.
So if you have a few favorite moments on the show, let us know so we can make sure to include them in the best of show. It's going to be super heavy editing week for Monica and Matt to comb through 52 episodes and figure out the best moments in all of them.
If you have a best of, that'll help target it. Do you have a best of?
George.
Oh, yeah.
Nom nom.
Oh, the badness. Stephanie.
Stephanie Rupert. Yeah, for sure. That's not to discount everybody else that we've had.
Yeah, I like all of our guest shows.
Yeah.
So we've had really fun ones, just us too.
Yeah. So that show will probably be pretty long, because we won't necessarily limit it. I mean, I don't know how long it'll be, but, you know.
Well, the last best of one was 2 hours.
Yeah. So feel free to listen to it at your leisure and not have to listen to it all the way through. The good thing is it'll probably be a couple minutes of sound bites at a time, so you can, you know, work out for 40 minutes, turn it off, come back to it the next day and not feel like, you know, you were in the middle of a conversation. So I'm not quite sure, but that'll be fun and interesting, and also give Sarah and I a little bit of a break. We'll probably do some voiceover stuff in the beginning, but we'll be able to go to bed like before 9 o'clock that night.
Sweet. I won't. I'll be able to like,
you'll be able
keep
to do
going
some
with editing and illustration. What the...
You're an illustrator now. It's so exciting.
I am. I'm like, I should say written and illustrated by Sarah Ballantyne on the front. Except that I'm not doing all the illustrations, so I don't know if that counts.
Pretty cool.
I should add myself to the acknowledgments. And I would like to thank myself for illustrating this book.
Oh, all right, everyone. We will be back next week, and we will try
very hard to be less bitter next week, I
less
promise.
Less bitter, less delirious, less talking about Craigslist, and I don't even know what else I said this episode. Like, it just went downhill after that.
Oh, dear.
Happy 50th.
Well, happy 50th. We should... Silver, right? Silver?
I'm not sending you silver. I like you and all, but...
All right, well, I'll send you, how about Phantom Silver?
Phantom Silver.
No, I mean, like, you know how it's like an e-hug? It could be like e-silver.
Oh, you're going to send me a picture of a fork?
That'd be perfect.
Okay, well, just pretend that I sent you a picture of a fork. I did it already.
Okay. All right, we should stop this before it just degenerates.
It's already, done. It's over. Everybody turned it off already, except for your mom. So your mom's still listening because she's a faith.
She is. Yeah. And she's probably got like 10 more minutes to her drive.
Good night.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.